Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Talk radio across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. We are, of course, the world headquarters of Common Sense, the place to find the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. There's lots going on today, as you might expect. Mist is swirling around the buildings here at Talk Radio Towers, but there's nothing mystical about what's occurring. Boris Johnson has headed back to Glasgow for Transport Day because nothing will convince people to stop travelling more than travelling, of course. Even John Prescott has got in on the act. He's heading up north, boasting that he's got rid of his two Jags and he's now known as Zero Jags. Brilliant. John Prescott always was good for a laugh. Meanwhile, down in Westminster, the media are still obsessed with sleaze, and the focus of the ire now appears to be focused on Sir Geoffrey Cox QC, which works out rather well for the Prime Minister. Cox is accused of using his parliamentary office to zoom into a corruption case against the Virgin Islands, which earned him an absolute fortune. If it turns out to be true, it's a massive breach of the rules. We've also got just one day to go for all care home staff to get double vaccinated or lose their jobs, and there could be as many as 60,000 people affected. First up this morning, though, we've got a special guest to speak to. Catherine Birbal-Singh is the chair of the Government Social Mobility Commission, and she also happens to be the head of the Michaela School here in London. I'll be asking her about how we fix the divisions in our society, why the truth has been hijacked by special interests, and what it is that makes people think turning children into victims actually helps them in any way, shape or form. Tonia Buxton's here as well with the latest on the vaccine mandates being handed out by Sajid Javid, and we'll get her take on Patrick Vallance's assertion that climate change is worse than COVID. Jamie Jenkins will be here. We're going to talk about what's going on Belarus and the Polish border too. We've got all sorts going on. Indeed, we might also touch upon Prince Harry, who's decided that the phrase Megxit is in fact misogynistic. I don't know what he's talking about. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, I'm delighted to say that for the very first time in the Independent Republic, we have Catherine Birbal-Singh. Catherine, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming in. We've got so much to talk about, really. And the thing I like about it is that it won't be COVID-related. It won't have anything to do with COP26. And it will be something completely different that we could actually charm the listeners with. Because you have been somebody that I've long admired for a very long time, since we started talking to you just about schooling and about what the education system was like. You've since, of course, been appointed as a social mobility sort of caretaker, if you like, for the government. Tell us a little bit about how that happened and what you do for them.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's only just started, but the idea of the Social Mobility Commission is that one kind of gives advice to government on things that one might think would help enable social mobility in the country. And there's a team of people who can do some research and analysis of various different issues, and I'll help push them in the right directions, as
yes.
I might see it, really.
Because I wonder whether we are at a point in our sort of societal history where social mobility is pretty low at the moment. You know, when I was growing up, a long time ago. And we became of age kind of in the 1980s, my sister and I, both at the same time. She ended up going to work in the city, which until then had been very much the place where only stockbrokers' sons could go and work. But suddenly Big Bang happened. She got a job,
right.
Did very well. I went and worked in America. There seemed to, the world seemed to be our oyster. It doesn't feel like that's the case now for kids coming out of college or coming out of school.
Well, I'm not sure that's the case, actually. My feeling is that, in fact, social mobility is far better now than people tend to think.
Uh-huh.
And that's the sort of thing that we can look at with the commission and do some analysis to see whether or not my kind of instinct on that is true.
Yeah.
But wherever it is, however good or bad it is, obviously we want it to get better. And that's what's key. And the things that I'd like to look at really are, a big thing is education, obviously. I think that schools make a massive difference to children in terms of what they're going to be able to do with their lives and how many doors will be open to them. I want to look at the routes into work at the other end of school, you know, apprenticeships and so on. We can go some way, I think, as a country to help in that area, because it's much more complex than I think people might realise.
Yes. I mean, I happen to think, and it may be a simplistic view, that there's too many teenagers going to university and just deciding they'll go there because they should.
Mm-hmm.
Again, when I was younger, not very many people went to university.
Yeah.
An awful lot of people just went to learn either a trade or got into a business.
Yes.
At a younger age, and you could get into the city or you could get into journalism. I mean, it's really hard to even get into this building if you haven't got a degree.
Yes.
And I think we're hoping to change that. We're trying to change that.
Yes. Well, I mean, and you make a good point that I do think sometimes there are students who end up doing degrees that they perhaps didn't have to do. And if there were other routes into the workplace that would enable them to get various jobs and work their way up, as it were, they might have been better off.
Yes.
And so I am interested in that. I'm also interested in what families can do for themselves, you know, at home in terms of enabling social mobility. I mean, on the one hand, there is the government, and that's great, and we want to make sure that the government is doing the right things. But I also think we as people need to do what we can to give ourselves the best chances at life.
Yes, because I think the worry that some people have is that there are pockets of this country where the poor remain poor, and for generations they don't really change anything about that. And we know that individuals can obviously shine and sometimes can come from the very poorest circumstances and do well. But what should we be doing differently, do you think, in terms of, I mean, levelling up is the phrase the government uses. I'm not sure anyone really knows what that means.
Well, there's an interesting point that you make about individuals, because there are some individuals who manage to change things for themselves and some others that don't. And then I think it'd be good to look at why. Why is that the case?
Right.
And a lot of it has to do, I think, with education, and in particular education before children even get to school. And a big thing for me, for instance, is screen time, smartphones, and how that can destroy children's abilities. So you give a toddler a smartphone, and then when you're trying to teach him to read later on, the book finds it really hard to compete with the smartphone,
right.
Because it's flat and black and white. Smartphone has lots of colours and explosions and so on.
Mm.
And then the parent thinks, oh, well, actually, he just never really liked reading. But the reality is, if you hadn't given him the smartphone, that might not have happened. And so I would love to see more campaigns to inform families of what kind of works with children in terms of helping them make the most of their abilities.
Yes, I think that's true. I think many parents would probably say, in their own defence, well, we gave them an iPad to play with at the restaurant because it stopped them from being a nuisance, effectively.
Yep.
It's easy, isn't it?
Yes, yes. No, exactly. Well, sometimes it's easy, but also I don't know if people realise the damage that they might be doing.
No.
You know, and that's the kind... And because it's so new, all of this technology is so new. And then eventually you get to a point where you can't take, you know, the smartphone away. Children go on hunger strike and they say they're leaving home and all sorts. And I'm not exaggerating, it's the kind of thing they do because they're so addicted.
Yeah.
And people don't realise that the Instagram, Snapchat, all of them, they have teams of people hired, addiction teams, to make the app more addictive,
right.
You know? And
it's
horrifying.
That,
it is. It's awful. And what we also don't realise is that the big tech CEOs in California, they don't give their children these screens.
Mm.
They protect their own children.
Do they?
I mean, Steve Jobs, when he was interviewed in 2010 about the new iPad coming out, was asked what his children thought of the iPad. And he said, well, obviously, I wouldn't give my children the iPad. You know, why would I
Amazing.
Do that?
Yeah.
And the rest of us, of course, imagine that his house is filled with phones and iPads.
Right.
It's not the case at all.
Yeah.
So the people who know, there's a wonderful film on Netflix called The Social Dilemma, which I would suggest all your viewers watch.
Okay.
It will scare the pants off you and
right.
will make sure you take those phones out of your toddler's hands.
Wow. And what about in your school then? Do Do you have no phone policy? Do you use computers in any way, shape or form, like in terms of creative
So we will use computers, but phones are not allowed on the premises. But we go further than that. We do a lot of work with families to get the children to not have smartphones even at home. Mm. We sell brick phones so that the parent can still have the accessibility to their child, right, be able to phone them and text them, but they don't have unsupervised access to the internet, which is just so important, especially for the older children, who then get involved with all kinds of people who you would not want your child to be involved with.
Yeah.
And the problem is you don't actually know that that's what's happening because they're doing it privately on their phone. And you have no idea.
And I worry as well about the sort of stuff that goes on once the children become sort of adolescents and they get to become 12, 13, 14 years of age, and the way they interact with each other on the internet and on Snapchat and stuff, and the kinds of things that pictures they exchange and all of that.
Exactly.
It's a very unhealthy world, isn't it?
Well, and it's a kind of spiral downwards. Yeah. The language that they use, the kind of a behavior that then comes from that, it normalizes aggressive, angry kind of behavior. Now, it doesn't mean that all children do this, but you are putting your child at risk when they have unsupervised access to the internet because you don't know what they're doing. Not only that, but it destroys family time. It's very individual. You're just on it on your own. The thing about TV, while I'm not the biggest fan of television and children, I'd rather they did their homework, obviously. Yeah. At least with the television, you sit around as a family and you can watch together.
Yeah.
With the phone, it actually breaks families apart. Mm. And I think in 50, 60 years' time, all of this will be very well known and we'll all have lots of books on this sort of thing.
Yeah, I've spoken to sort of parental guidance counsellors and things who say, you know, they have a basket at the front door and whoever comes home, they drop the phone in the basket and they don't use it again until they go back out again.
Great idea.
But it's easy to say, though, but is it easy to do? I mean, how do you get the success rates that you get with parents?
Well, we have a digital detox system at school where the children can voluntarily drop their phones off and they can drop them for 2 days, 3 days. When they're coming up towards the GCSE exams, the children will drop them there for several weeks, if not months at a time. And people are kind of astonished by this. But because we're constantly talking about it, the culture at Michaela is very much one of don't break your brain.
Right.
Spend your time on your homework. Do this for yourself. Mm. You know, our sixth formers, again, they just they're able to drop the phone off and then concentrate on their A-levels.
Yeah.
And it's great if you get the buy-in from the kids.
Yeah.
And what parents really like is having that support from the school. Sometimes I think parents can be frustrated. Friends of mine, if I say, take the phone away from your child, and they say, yeah, but the school is asking us to use the phone. The school is asking us. And so I do think schools and parents, all of us, have a part to play in here to try and help them be the best version of themselves that they can be.
Yes.
And that's the thing that I really want to be. Everybody has a certain ability level. Well, are we actually reaching those ability levels?
Yes.
You know,
and are all children being given those opportunities? Because in the end, it's all about opportunities. Because, of course, I mean, I always say to people, I went to grammar school when I was younger, and it's very difficult now to find grammar schools apart from in Kent and Lancashire, I think. You're a fan of grammar schools or not really?
Well, I don't have anything against them. There are a couple of grammar schools near us. So actually, in many ways, we're secondary modern because those kids go off, you know, our children haven't, you know, passed the 11 plus. I'm not against them.
No, but there are some educators who don't think that the exam regimens that we have are good for kids, that they put too much pressure on them. I mean, I think exams are a good thing.
I don't know
what you think has happened to the education system in the last 2 years, because clearly so many schools have been closed for such a long period of time. It's been very difficult. How did you manage that?
Yeah, well, we did our Zoom lessons and we gave phone calls home and we did lots and lots to support the children. But it doesn't really matter because nothing can replace a good teacher in a classroom.
Mm.
Children need their teachers with them, holding them to account. And when I say holding them to account, you're able to test for learning right away in the classroom. Have they got it? Have they not? Oh, I'm going to reteach that. When you're on Zoom, that's impossible.
Yeah.
And you have no idea whether or not they're actually taking on board what you're teaching them. So huge losses happened over the pandemic, in particular for disadvantaged children, because obviously if you have... If you have a situation at home which can be more able to get you on top of the work and can support you, you know, if the family doesn't speak English, well, very difficult. You know, there are all kinds of things that will hold disadvantaged children back. Mm. But my position right now is we can all catch up. We can all work hard. if we were to take away screen time from kids and get the behaviour right in our schools across the country, you'd be amazed at how quickly everybody would catch up.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. And interestingly, you've spoken before about the one of the things that disadvantaged children don't need is to be told they're disadvantaged constantly, or
yes.
to be told that they're somehow worse off
yes.
and they've got less chance and yes. they'll never get anywhere.
Yes, that's absolutely the case. My position is, look, you know... progressives like to talk about the obstacles in life, like racism and sexism and so on, and they may very well exist. I'm almost not interested. I mean, what's important to me is, are we maximizing our opportunities? Are we making sure we're taking personal responsibility so that we can deliver when we're in our lessons, so that we can deliver on those exam papers? I, too, believe very much in exams. It can show... It gives children something to work towards, and it helps them hone those abilities. I feel really sorry for the exam groups, both GCSE and A-level, who went through over the pandemic
yeah.
because they didn't really have those no. national exams that they could work towards. And it means then that later in life, you learn stuff about yourself, how you learn, how to make sure, when do you work best, how do you keep on top of things, where do you get that resilience from, how do you get the motivation to keep going when you're down, you know, all of that stuff is what makes people successful.
Sure. And how you handle the stress of worrying about
exactly.
it as well, because if you
exactly.
don't have any stress as a child or as a teenager, you
yeah.
won't know what to do, and I think that's what we suffer from right now.
Yeah.
You know, I know an awful lot of young people who can't handle it. They
yes.
just can't handle anything.
Yes, and of course that comes from a very young age, and I think too often progressives can argue against exams, you know, certainly when they're younger in year one and two and so on. They say, no, we shouldn't be testing children. But the fact is that in the private sector, children are tested all the time. They're at 7 plus, 8 plus, 11, 13. They've got these exams
yeah.
to get into various schools. So that means by the time they get to GCSE at 16... Well, this is old
just
play. They
test.
Know they've done it so many times before. And so I don't think we're helping anybody to protect them from these tests, because the fact is, in life, there are loads and loads of tests. And if you don't deliver that talk to the board in the way that you're meant to, well, they'll fire you. And so at school, what's great about school? It's your opportunity to be able to fail and then pick yourself up. Fail again, pick yourself up, and to learn how to build that resilience so that later in life you can succeed. You fail now, you succeed later. But if you're protected all the time now, then you won't succeed later.
Right.
And our job as teachers and as parents is to build them up, get that confidence. And how do you get that confidence? By succeeding at the various things you're doing. And you succeed by failing, picking yourself up,
yeah.
keep on going, and so on.
And by
yep.
taking chances, because a lot of people,
yes.
again, are not prepared to do that on the grounds that they're worried they might fail. And you
yes.
go, well, you know, I've always been asked that question. You know, aren't you worried? You know, I used to be in newspapers, and when I got into radio, people were like, how do you know you're not going to fail at radio? And I
yes.
went, well, I just don't think I am. I
yes.
know. I'll just have a go, see how it goes.
Yes.
It's going all right. It's going quite well, in fact.
But,
you know, as parents, we're always wondering what we should be doing more. There's always
yes.
more that you can do.
Yes.
But at the same time, you know, my two boys now, the younger two, are 17 and 14. So
uh-huh.
they don't really want to see much of me at all at this point. You
no.
know? And it's actually quite a struggle to get them to do anything with the rest of the family.
Yes.
But at the same time, I don't want to make them do that. And I want them to kind of branch out. I mean, during lockdown at one point, I actually said to the 17-year-old, why don't you go out and hang around on the street corner and drink some cider or something like you're supposed to? And he laughed at it because he hadn't been out. Because he started,
yes.
I think the lockdown's been really hard for a lot of families
it
and
has.
A lot of kids.
Yes, yes. No, absolutely. Well, you're just saying you want them to be kind of normal. They're
yeah.
going out and doing normal
right.
things and just behaving.
And getting into a little
yes.
bit of trouble, because that's what you expect them to do.
Yes.
But, I mean, overall, you just want them to be happy.
Yes. Well, indeed.
You
but
know.
Happiness is an interesting thing. And I think if you make happiness your goal, actually, that ironically, that can actually undermine them being happy. What you want is for them to be successful at the various things that they're trying to do. You know, young parents, get them on, when I say with young kids, you know, get them learning an instrument. Put your all into that. That's not because they're going to become a professional pianist later,
right.
but because it gives them something to concentrate on
yeah.
and to feel like they've achieved that. Every time they see a piece of music, they think, I can't do that. But by the end, they can. You want to find things. Now, that's the case with all sorts of things. That's just an example. It might be that you get them on some football coaching.
Right.
And again, they think, oh, I can't get the ball around those pylons. But then they keep practicing and then they manage it. You want as many activities like that as possible so that they can know that they feel at the beginning they can't do it, and then at the end they can. And what was the difference? Practice,
yes.
right? And too often, I think, in the West, we think to ourselves, oh, well, I just can't do it. I'm not cut out for that. In the East, they don't think like that. In the East, they think, put the hard work in and you'll get there.
Yes.
And that's something I really want to see more of here with all of us in the West. Really.
No, I think that's an interesting point, because I think there is that tendency now for people to talk to their kids as if they are trying to kind of wrap them in cotton wool and make sure that they don't come to any harm, and to make sure that they're protected, so that nobody, I mean, the whole business of offence that people take nowadays seems to me to be undermining people's happiness as well, because people just take offence all the time. And I was interested in one of your tweets about the truth. Truth has become so inconsequential to some of us that we are moving to a point where we no longer consider it valuable, because it's all about your truth now and my truth, as opposed to the truth, right?
Yes, that's right. And
how do you deal with that in school?
Well, actually, I think we do such a great job of getting our kids to understand right from wrong and so on. We don't, you know, they get it. Our kids are so great. Mm. You know, you love them. You need to come and visit the school.
I will.
And in fact, you know, we get over 600 visitors a year visiting the school. They come and have lunch with the kids. They go on a tour. And you'll see lots of really excited children who love learning and who... I think they believe in truth. Mm. I mean, it'd be interesting. I'll have to give it one of our lunch topics. I'll have to ask them and see what they think.
Well, maybe we'll come and have a conversation about truth, because, you know, we have a very divided truth now in this country, where we have those who believe that we should have stayed in the European Union, those that think we should have left, those that think that, you know, COVID should be now something that we move on from and carry on further, those who think that climate change is the most important thing we'll ever deal with. And it seems that the polarisation now of everything has driven people insane.
It's true. There is a polarisation, and that's a bit of a shame.
Yeah.
I do try hard on my Twitter, actually, to try and speak, you know, to both ends, as it were.
Yeah.
And try and make sure that one's thoughts are more nuanced and complex, you know.
Right.
Just because if you find you're always agreeing with one side, maybe you need to just hear what the other side is saying.
Yeah.
I think just generally.
But when we hear from politicians and from scientists, well, there's no debate now on this subject. This is the result of what we have decided, and therefore anyone who doesn't agree with it is clearly some kind of basket case that needs to be locked up.
Yeah, and
that's
the problem.
Good.
And I understand ordinary people's frustration when the media classes have got the airwaves and they've got the kind of power, as it were, to say what's what.
Right.
And they feel like their ordinary views that they think are pretty normal, because that's what everybody thinks around them, that these people in their positions that, you know, of power are kind of looking down on them.
Yeah.
And I get it. I get the anger. I do.
I do as well. When you get some people that call into our shows who have just got ordinary lives, you know, they've got not very much money, but they've got enough to get by. They're working. They're doing the best for their kids.
Yes.
You know, they don't want to be bombarded all the time with how wrong their lives are and how privileged they are because of the color of their skin or how underprivileged they are because of the color of their skin.
I get that. Although I am somebody who will bombard quite a lot on how to be a better parent or how to be a better teacher.
Yeah, but as long as it's... I mean, we call ourselves the home of common sense because we like to think that that's what we teach people.
Yes.
It's not ideologically driven.
Yes,
People accuse us of being ideologically driven, but it's driven simply by just common sense. You know, like I said about Boris Johnson, you know, it's travel day. Where everybody's supposed to be encouraged not to travel. So all the politicians have travelled to Scotland.
Yeah.
And you go, well, that doesn't make much sense, does it?
No.
It's not really showing a great example to jump on a private jet when telling me not to drive anywhere with my children and make them walk to school.
Yes. No, indeed. And I think that's a really good point about role models, that we adults need to be role models for children.
Right.
And that means that we need to not make ourselves into victims. We need to, when we fall down, pick ourselves up and keep on going. We need to try and take personal responsibility. We need to... Look, I know teenagers are hard, aren't they? I mean, you've got teenagers.
Yeah.
But I think you need to insist on them sitting around the dinner table.
Oh, we do.
Oh, right. Okay, great.
No, we definitely
do that. Well done, you.
Yeah, no, we definitely do that. But they can't wait to get away. That's not the problem. No, we sit them down. We make them discuss the thing elements of the day.
Good.
You know, we make them talk.
Good. Well, you say that as if it's obvious. It's not obvious, right? There are lots of families where that doesn't happen. Mm. And that's really, really important because they know you care about them. It's bonding time.
Yeah.
You get to talk about stuff so that they learn about the world. Of course they're going to scuttle off afterwards.
Yeah.
I mean, they're teenagers.
Right.
That's normal, right? But great that you have that family time together.
Yes, no, definitely. Well, listen, you're an absolute inspiration, Catherine. I'm so glad you came here. We could talk for hours, but I will come and talk to you some more at your school.
Come and visit us, yes.
If you could give one piece of advice, and this is the hard bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
One piece of advice to parents listening to this now going, what do we do to make our kids better?
loads and loads of reading, minimal screen time.
Okay. Oh, that's pretty straightforward. Catherine Birbal Singh, good luck with the government as well, because that looks like a lot of treacle to clamber through for about 100 miles of bad road. But there we are. Catherine Birbal Singh, thank you so much for coming in. Please do let us know what you made of all of that, because I find it fascinating. I think it's inspirational. This is what we do here at Talk Radio. We're going to teach you how to be cleverer. This is Talk Radio.
Talk Radio, across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham, on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio. We're now, of course, also available on your television as well, on Apple TV, Rakuten, Samsung TV Plus, Roku, YouTube Now. We're also on Amazon Fire TV as well. You can watch us on an iPad, you can watch us on a watch, you can watch us on a phone, you can watch us on any device that you happen to have that you can live stream us on. For details, just go to talkradio.tv or simply download the Talk Radio TV app from the App Store. Now, Boris Johnson apparently is on his way up to Glasgow on a train. So he's obviously learned his lesson from taking the private jet back to the Garrick the other day. Whether or not we shall see him coming back on a train is another matter. But I can't see anything right now. I'm looking out the window. It is so misty and murky that I cannot actually see the Tower of London, which always disturbs me when I can't see that, because it annoys me. I like to look at the Tower of London. I think it's a wonderful place. But I'll tell you what we're going to do now. We're going to go down to Wales, because Jamie Jenkins is here, independent statistician, political commentator, of course. Jamie, very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Now, what's going on in Wales? Mr. Drakeford appears to have thrown the cat out the window and decided that the bath towel's going with it and everything else. What's happening?
Yeah, so we've got these COVID passes in Wales. So they're slightly different to COVID passports overall, where you can get a lateral flow test. And they've been in kind of venues, big stadiums. I think the rugby's been recently. And then you've got nightclubs, similar to what you kind of got up in Scotland. And what Mark Drakeford said a few weeks ago is that if you actually, if we don't see cases coming down, we're going to look to extend them. Now, in cases in Wales have actually been coming down over the last few weeks, and in England, to point that out as well, Mike, we've had the longest declining cases across England and Wales since the summer.
Right.
But they had a vote in the Senate yesterday to look to extend these now into theatres, into cinemas now. I'll just give a little bit of an antidote on this one, Mike, that my 8-year-old boy, actually, 12 people in his class have got COVID.
Right.
So he tested positive for it over the weekend. I had to have a test yesterday to release myself because they changed the rules in Wales. You've got to have a negative PCR test. And I actually tested positive, come back this morning saying I've tested positive. But I have very few symptoms at all, Mike, a little bit of a headache, but I've got no loss of smell, no high temperature, no cough.
Right.
But I have been double jabbed, Mike, so I could get a COVID pass. I haven't needed to get a COVID pass, so I haven't actually got one. But I could go to all these venues.
Yeah.
If my son hadn't tested positive because of lots of people in his class had got COVID, I could be out spreading the virus myself.
But that's the point. The whole idea of the vaccine passport, or vaccine pass, whatever you want to call it, is nonsensical. In the same way that making people get double jabbed doesn't make any sense either, because if they didn't want to do it in the first place, why would they suddenly do it now? And as we know, it doesn't actually change the transmissibility, if you like, of COVID.
No, I think the important thing really, Mike, is that, and this is for the NHS staff, obviously, where they're trying to mandate these vaccines. On that, an interesting statistic, obviously, COVID is kind of a deadly virus for a lot of people, but it's generally the elderly that it does kill. If you are looking at the stats yesterday, Mike, and if you look at the flu vaccine last winter, only 77% of NHS frontline staff had the flu vaccine. And, you know, the flu is a deadly virus as well. But going back to these kind of vaccine passports, what the problem with them is, Mike, is that people who've had a prior infection, and there'd be huge amounts of NHS and care staff who've had a prior infection. The ONS have done some research and study and some analysis themselves to show that the chances of you catching COVID are significantly reduced if you've had a prior infection. But none of the ministers, you know, none of the policies are thinking about all of that.
No.
You know, there's millions of people who've had COVID, Mike, and saying that you have to have a jab. You know, I say I'm double jabbed, but it's not for me to tell anybody if they should have a vaccine or not, and mandating vaccines when we've never done that in the past for the likes of flu, which is a deadly respiratory virus for many, just seems a bit too far for me, Mike.
Well, that's right. And I mean, the thing is, we've got statistics on pretty much everything. I saw that you were having a go at some of the reporting deaths soaring to 262 on a Tuesday compared to Monday, because quite frankly, everybody who's anybody knows that Tuesday's figure is always higher than Monday's because of the weekend collection and all of that. But also, they do collect evidence and data on everything, but they don't collect it, or they certainly haven't shared it with us, on herd immunity.
No, I think that's the, I knew a few months back, or maybe a few weeks back, Mike, they were saying they run out of these test tubes to do some tests across the NHS.
And oh, really?
Ultimately,
what, a shortage of test tubes? Surely not.
Well, yeah, we have to put that one in your shortage of the week, Mike, or something. But we had a shortage of test tubes because why not offer antibody tests for people who've had kind of prior infection? And that's why I was always critical about vaccinating children as well. So my boy, obviously, he's 8 now. He's downstairs at the moment. Mike, he's playing on his computer. He's at all his mates, 11 of them, are all kind of with their headsets, loving the fact that they're all off school and he hasn't got any, he's not coughing or anything. Right. He's just having a whale of a time. So I think kind of when we're looking at all of this in the, like the grand scheme, of the day, Mike, you know, the other day as well, you had the NHS boss kind of saying that the number of people going into hospital was 14 times higher than this time last year. Absolute nonsense.
Well, it was rubbish. Well, she's like, you'll be pleased to know she made herself onto the plank of the week list for that.
No, good, Mike, because for me, there's a bit about, some people might say, oh, she was deliberately trying to be misleading to try and scare people to go and get a booster jab. But you know, it's just the kind of the smell test with that number. It's not rocket science. If you're the head of the NHS, you should have some nouse with a bit of data to know the fact that
Ian Collins said to me the other day, if you'd done the maths on that, it would mean that 154,000 people were in hospital. And you go, exactly, well, that's just ridiculous. And anyone looking at that, if they were in a PR department of the NHS, would have said, well, that must be wrong.
Exactly that, Mike. And just for the listeners and the viewers, this actually, rather than being 14 times higher at the moment, if you actually look at the numbers, they're a third lower. And say cases are coming down now. The interesting thing here, Mike, is they started looking like they peaked before half term and schools have actually gone back. And we're not seeing this big spike. And the interesting thing is that we say we've had 14 days now of consecutive declines, which is the longest period now since the summer, which is an important part of all of this. And ironically, even though Scotland do have lower rates overall, if you start tracking over the last few weeks in terms of where the growth in cases are, it's in Scotland. And what we got in Scotland, Mike? We got vaccine passports, we got masks. You know, England's got the biggest decline in cases. Scotland's got the biggest increase in cases. None of this is making much sense at all anymore.
Well, none of it is at all. And of course now, just to add sort of fuel to the fire, Patrick Vallance, one of the government's scientific advisors, has come out and said that climate change is going to be worse than COVID. So presumably that means we can forget about COVID then, can we?
Well, you know, Mike, this little climate change thing is, you know, we can't deny this. We've got to do our bit for the planet. But for me,
I can't even see the planet out the window today. That's how bad it is.
Well, they probably say it's all the emissions from all the cars, Mike. Although I think in London you don't get many cars because they've got all the cycle lanes.
Yeah, you can't go anywhere in a car this moment in time in London. You can just sit in it and leave the engine running, unless you've got one of those economic ones, ergonomic ones, where the engine cuts out.
Exactly that, Mike. You know. No, exactly that. And I think that the problem you've got, obviously, now is that we're coming out the back end of COVID, hopefully. The case is actually going rife in Europe. Only a few weeks ago, Mike, everybody was saying how bad the UK is. Obviously, we're testing significantly more than the rest of Europe. But they got a fourth wave in Germany and Russia. Things have gone kind of off the scale. It's probably an element there, Mike, because obviously vaccines are in some of these countries that ultimately to get out of this, everybody's going to need to catch the virus. As I've had two jabs where I've caught the virus now. And obviously, I won't come back with too many symptoms. But ultimately, Mike, that's what we're going to need. And maybe now the kind of the scientists are starting to move on to the climate change agenda as the next thing to start scaring us, because you can't tell me, Mike, that, you know, it all starts with some kind of leadership here. If Boris Johnson's going to start flying back and forth Scotland, and I think Prince Charles, Mike, I was going to do the maths on this, but I haven't got around to doing it. I think Prince Charles's climate kind of CO2 emissions in the last month's probably been more than my lifetime when he's flying around in the world.
Well, so, I mean,
you know, I'm going to bank in what Prince Charles has done.
COP26 is going to create more carbon emissions than the entire nation of Scotland in a year, right? So that's what their hypocrisy is doing. But what about this business at the end of the day of why we are still in the position that we are in, despite the fact that more or less a lot of life has pretty much returned to normal? I'm finding a lot of people now are getting COVID after the fact. And some of those people are getting it because they had their second jab, say, 5 or 6 months ago, which suggests anyway that the jab does wear off. In which case people might say, well, I wish I'd never bothered getting it.
Yeah, well, obviously, we're coming through and learning a lot about all of this. I think my jab was probably about 4, 5, 6 months ago. And I think ultimately what we're going to probably need to come up with all of this is I put a tweet out yesterday to just continue to look at the death statistics on all of this. And it's still a virus that's more deadly for the elderly. You know, we've got the vast majority of all of the deaths, 90% a kind of all the deaths in the past month, the people over the age of 60, nearly three quarters of the age of 75, despite, you know, the majority of these people being vaccinated. Now, deaths, you know, let's not kind of shy away from the previous waves. Deaths are considerably lower because the vaccine will be having an effect. But I think longer term, Mike, vaccinating the whole population, and there was talk about you can't travel if you haven't had a third booster, they're going to roll out to the whole population. I think, Mike, we're just going to learn to kind of, where you have a flu vaccine for the JCVI vulnerable groups, you'll have a COVID vaccine. Vaccinating the whole population isn't the way out of all of this in the longer term, and further jabs. You know, prior infection over time, you look back 100 years ago, Mike, with the Spanish flu, you had the first wave, you had a second wave, you had an extra wave. But over time, these waves kind of diminish because you tend to find the virus has become more transmissible, but less deadly. So I think vaccination in the longer term isn't going to be the solution to all of this. It's probably just going to be kind of the word herd immunity in the end.
People actually getting it. Jamie, great to talk to you. Thanks very much indeed. Jamie Jenkins, independent statistician and political commentator on the latest COVID stats, which are very, very encouraging if you want to see the end of this, because it would suggest that they are at their lowest level for quite some time and they're going down continually. So all this talk of, you know, cancelling Christmas if you don't get the booster jab, I think they're not going to go near that if they've got any brains. This is Mike Graham on Talk Radio with the Veterans Railcard. If you've served at least a day in the armed forces, you could save a third on rail travel. Visit railcard.co.uk to apply.
Talk Radio across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, the home of common sense, the one place that you have to come to if you want to hear the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Also, of course, the place you can watch as well as listening, because there's all sorts of great things to see on Talk Radio. We've got Plank of the Week coming up later on, but you can watch it on Apple TV, on Rakuten, on Samsung TV Plus, on Roku, YouTube, and now Amazon Fire TV as well. Watch us in every single way that you can, because we are growing faster than you can shake a stick at. Go to talkradio.tv or go to the App Store and download the Talk Radio TV app. Now, we're going to go at the phones right now because we've got plenty of people to talk to, plenty of common sense to be had. Let's talk to Martin, who's in Lincolnshire. Hello, Martin.
Yeah, hello, Mike. Good morning. Yeah,
morning. What can I do for you, Martin?
Yeah, enjoying the show. Thank you. Out of all the presenters, you're the only one I choose to listen to.
Well, so that's very kind, very kind. But you should keep going with the others. You never know. You might learn something.
Well, I used to listen to them all, yes, but anyway.
Never mind about that. What do you want to tell me about the NHS?
Well, yes. I've had probably something like 14, 15 months of treatment for cancer with the NHS. Well, the first thing was an operation, then there was follow-up, then there was radiotherapy and some treatment recently.
Right.
And fantastic, fantastic. You wouldn't think all this stuff you hear about all the NHS, you wouldn't think so. They're so positive in there. But speaking to nurses, there's big concern about this mandating of vaccines.
Yes, I'm sure.
And the point I want to make, if they mandate vaccines for NHS staff, we are one step away from mandating that anybody wanting to go into hospital for treatment will have to be up to date with their vaccines as well. That'll be the next step.
Yes. Well, this is what worries a lot of people, because there's already doctors, GPs, who will not see you as a patient unless you've got a negative COVID test. And they might say the same and say you can't come into the surgery unless you've been vaccinated.
Well, all I'll say is this, we are all part of a grand experiment. And the experiment is, how far can we go in controlling people's lives? And the thing we have lost in this country, and probably around the world as well, is community. The church has gone, that went a long time. I'm not a churchgoer, I never have been. But we should stop lining up behind government and these idiots that are put in these positions. I mean, Sajid Javid, he ought to be ashamed of himself. He doesn't know his backside from his elbow when it comes to keeping people healthy and safe.
No.
He's just a mouthpiece, as is Boris and all the rest of them.
Yeah, and they're not interested in questions that they don't want to answer. They just avoid them.
Well, this is the next problem we have in society. You're not allowed to... Well, I'll criticise anybody, but the way things go... I mean, I've seen reports that were published by The Lancet, a recognised medical journal, for it subsequently to be taken down because pressure gets put upon them to take it down.
Yeah.
So just as with climate change caused by man... And I really worry about mankind trying to control the climate, because if he does the same job as he's done with this COVID in the hierarchy,
we're all doomed. No, I think you're absolutely right, Martin. Good call. Thank you very much for making it. He's absolutely right, of course, because the arrogance of the COP26 brigade, the people who say we can change the climate by operating ourselves differently. No, who says you can? Nobody that I know believes that. Let's talk to Jay in London. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Mike. Great show as ever.
Thank you.
Just wondered what your thoughts were on vaccine passports for five-year-old children.
Well, I think it's ridiculous. They shouldn't be vaccinating children at all, in my view.
Oh, right. Well, that's already happening in America, New York.
Especially. I know they're asking. I knew they were asking whether they could do it. I didn't know they'd started doing it. Is that the case?
No. In a press conference yesterday, he confirmed that they're working on it.
Yeah, they're working on it. Yeah, they've got a plan to vaccinate people all the way down to five. Absolute madness. They're not vaccinating kids.
Where does it end, Mike? I mean, they're actually currently testing the vaccine on six-month-old babies as we speak.
That's mad, isn't it? I mean, who in their right mind is going to let you vaccinate their baby?
Exactly. Gavin Newsom, Miami guy, in the States.
Yes.
He's insisting that five-year-olds have their vaccination. If they don't, they can't go to school anymore in that state.
That's ridiculous. That is mad.
No jab, no school, Mike. Mm. Yeah. And this, I'm worried is this, it happens in the States and then it comes over to this country. I've got a clip on my Twitter account, that I posted about 3 months ago.
Gavin Newsom's the governor of California, by the way, not Florida.
California, yeah.
Because California's gone mad.
Yeah. And he's currently on the missing list, apparently, but there's rumours about him having adverse reactions himself.
All right. Well, we don't report rumours on this station, mate. This is about the truth on here. So as soon as we know something, we tell you. He's gone. Where's he gone? Jay's gone. See you, Jay. Listen, we've got a lot going on here. It's been a busy day. The skies have brightened up slightly. I could now just about see the Tower of London. It's a bit murky, but luckily, as ever, whenever this show is on, the world gets a little bit brighter. A little bit more light is shone in the dark spots of places where people like to hide. Because we don't let you hide on this show. We're going to find you. We're going to wheedle out the truth from you. And we're going to tell everybody else what is going on in the real world out there. 0344 499 1000. We are, of course, at Talk Radio with the Veterans Railcard. Just a single day service in the Armed Forces qualifies you for the Veterans Railcard. Visit railcard.co.uk to apply.
Radio across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. I'll tell you what, this show has gone like rocket fuel. And some people do say it's not rocket science. Well, I'll tell you what, it's rocket science running the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. There's so much going on today. I've literally got to have 4 hands, 10 heads, 3 brains, 4 feet, and a really good producer. But that's what you do when you're in the talk radio towers of truth, because that's what we do right here, of course, from Monday to Friday. And coming up in this hour, we've got some even more interesting stuff to talk about, because we've had Tonya Buxton talking about the government and their ridiculous restrictions, their ridiculous idea that people should be double vaccinated in order to work in the NHS or indeed in care homes. We've had Catherine Verbal Singh on in the first hour telling us about what we need to do to improve the chances of our children getting socially mobile and moving up a gear and going from a place of perhaps poverty into a place of success. And these things are all terribly important today. We're now going to talk to Henry Bolton, OBE, who's chairman of BritPac. He's an expert in international border control, and goodness knows we need one of those right now, not just for our own borders, but for lots of other parts of the countries around us as well. Because if you see what's been going on the border of Belarus and Poland, you will be horrified to know that might just in fact be something agitated by the Russian President Vladimir Putin. We'll ask Henry what on earth the EU is doing about it, what on earth we're doing about stopping people coming to this country on illegal migrant boats, what on earth we're doing to get rid of people who seem to be able to be stopped from being deported every single turn. And it's just ridiculous now, isn't it? 0344 499 1000 is the number. We're also going to be telling you a story about some people who are having money taken away from them by greedy mobile phone companies. That's going to be interesting. Coming up a little bit later on as well. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, it may have passed you by, but if you've been paying attention to the news over the last few days, you'll have seen that there's been quite a punch-up going on the borders between Poland and Belarus, because a whole load of migrants from the Middle East have been trying to get in and basically by force break through fences from Belarus into Poland. Now, the European Union, of course, is not doing what I would regard as anything much about this. People are calling for NATO troops to be brought in to try and smooth things over. But let's talk now to Henry Bolton OBE, who's an expert in international border control, and ask him what he thinks is actually going on. Henry, very good afternoon to you.
Hi, Mike.
Thanks very much indeed for joining us. I mean, this is quite a worrying development, isn't it? And it seems to be getting worse rather than better.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Mike, there are migrants heading towards Western Europe from all over the Middle East, from Africa, and from parts of Central Asia. And, you know, we're talking hundreds of thousands of people who are on the move at the moment for all sorts of different reasons. Now, what we're seeing in Belarus and on the Belarusian-Polish border is actually a weaponizing of that. A little while ago, there were presidential elections held in Belarus, and the sitting president, Alexander Lukashenko, who's been president since Belarus became an independent state after the collapse of the Soviet Union, that election, as they all have been in during his tenure, was absolutely 100% fixed. There was no way any opposition party was going to get any traction. The opposition was stamped upon. And as a result of that behaviour, the European Union took sanctions or applied sanctions to the Belarusian authorities and Litvinenko and some of his lieutenants, if you like. Now, this is him pushing back. He has, as a matter of deliberate policy, attracted migrants from the Middle East, particularly some from Afghanistan, and sort of camped them in Belarus with the sole intention of getting them on the border if the European Union doesn't ease up on the sanctions. So this is, we all know that we're facing an existential sort of problem in the channel. We know about the Libyan thing and the movement across the Sahel, across the Mediterranean to Italy, Greece and so on through the European Union. We all know about that. But this is possibly the first time that we're seeing migration being absolutely weaponized to place political pressure on a government. And I'm calling, in a sense, the European Union a government. The problem here for the European Union is that they've got this, they're schizophrenic. On the one hand, the European Union insists as a bloc on securing its external borders. And we see that sort of thing playing out all over the place at the moment, not only in Poland, but on the Northern Irish border. But the external borders. But on the other hand, the member states of the European Union won't allow the European Union itself to develop the forces, the institutions, the policing institutions to actually secure those borders. So at the moment, we've got this sort of situation where Poland is being left rather on its own. Mm. It's got the support of something called Frontex, which is the EU's frontier service, but it's more sort of advisory and training than anything else. And so Poland is carrying the brunt of this. And as you can see, you know, this is like water hitting a dam. And at some point, it may overflow or burst through.
Well, absolutely right. I mean, I'm seeing some pictures right now, Henry, of people from the Belarusian side basically sort of brandishing spades and shovels and trying to hit the Polish border guards with them. We're also told, I was watching a report last night from there, in which there were text messages being sent out by the Polish border patrol saying, you know, border is closed, do not please attempt to cross. Also, rather menacingly, do not take any pills from Belarusian soldiers. The suggestion being that these soldiers are handing out amphetamines to these young men so that they're going kind of crazy and just being able to be superhuman and running at these fences.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, this is all part of the politicisation of this. I don't know whether the connection's okay, Mike. I'm getting a sign saying the connection's poor at this end.
No, you're
sorry
okay.
About that.
No, carry on.
This is all part of the politicisation of it. And it's playing out big style. I mean, you talked about Putin earlier in your introduction. I mean, we've got a gas problem at the moment, energy problem. We all know about that, the rising prices and so on, particularly in gas. And during this crisis, Putin has he cut the flow of gas, natural gas, from the Russian Federation to Germany and the European Union by 25%. What we're seeing here is we're seeing Belarusia, Litvinenko, supported by Putin, taking action to put huge political and economic pressure on the European Union to stop the European Union taking any sort of sanctions or measures against them. Now, this is more global power politics than it is just migration, but they're using migration. And of course, this rhetoric, this propaganda coming out of the Belarusians is all fueling the anti-Polish, anti-EU, anti-Western European rhetoric. Mm. And it is massively dangerous. And, you know, if you connect that with what's happening with cyber and the assaults on our institutions from Russian cyber attacks, you know, we've got a lot going on here.
Yeah.
And at the moment, we're all wrapped up in our own little world back here, and we're forgetting that both China and Russia, and Russia through, by proxy, Belarusia at the moment, they're actually acting in a very hostile manner. They smell blood.
Yeah.
With the fuel crisis, with after COVID, they're smelling blood and smelling the opportunity to get us on the back foot.
Yeah. Well, do you know what, Henry? I think the worry I've got...
Nor are the Europeans.
Yeah, the worry that I've got is that they must be sitting about laughing at us in China, in Beijing and in Moscow, because here we are concentrating on COP26, worried sick about the climate, which they don't care about, right? Worried sick about COVID restrictions, which they also don't care about. And instead, I would say the quintessential problem that we are facing, and the biggest problem we are facing, is not climate change, not COVID, but this mass immigration of people coming in their millions, literally, from Middle East, Africa, through Europe, and eventually to Britain.
Mike, I agree. I've said many times on social media and on other channels that I think that this failure, I'm talking about Britain now, the failure of the British government to address the increasing flow of migrants across the English Channel is the biggest political scandal of this century so far.
Yeah.
I think it stinks of utter incompetence. And unfortunately, we see that lack of planning, lack of capability in other areas. We see it in healthcare, we see it in education, we see it in public transport, we see it in local government. There is a mind-bogglingly high degree of incompetence across our government, politicians, government and civil service at the moment. It has to be addressed. And, you know, there are people around who can help this. So I was speaking to somebody the other day on the energy side. I mean, he's pulling his hair out. Mm. He was very high up in BP. He helped the Russians to build Gazprom, and the British government's not even talking to him, refuses to talk to them. And the British government paid me for 20 years thereabouts to help other governments sort out problems like the ones we face in the English Channel successfully. They know what I'm capable of, but they won't talk to me. I've written to the Prime Minister, the Home Secretary, various other people. I don't even get a response. And they know very well that, you know, there's expertise out there, but they're too full of themselves to reach out for it.
And we keep hearing from Priti Patel that, you know, this will not stand. You know, we're going to be making sure that these illegal crossings end, and nothing happens. You know, and I'm told that this new bill, which is going through Parliament, is probably not going to get through Parliament and get into law until sometime in the spring, possibly as late as April. So between now and April, they'll be still coming. And we're also now told that there's a pretty good plan for them to get bigger boats, which is what they use in the Mediterranean, so that instead of people arriving sort of in their dozens, they'll be arriving in their hundreds next year.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, we'll see whether that happens. But what we do know is that the flow is increasing.
Yeah.
And what we do know is that the flow heading to the UK, already coming across from Africa and Afghanistan and Syria and so on, we know that that flow is increasing further up the pipeline with the expectation that it's easy to get to the UK.
Mm.
So these numbers are just going to grow. The only limitation on it at the moment is, frankly, weather conditions in the Channel.
Absolutely.
What Priti Patel is doing, and I happen to know this from inside the sort of inner sanctums of the Home Office, what Priti Patel is doing is reacting with headline statements and promises to ward off adverse headlines. What she doesn't seem to grasp is that the only way to deal with these headlines is to deal with a problem.
Yeah.
We're getting sick and tired of just these words. Her plans to turn around migrants in the Channel, utterly unworkable, simply under international law, on an operational level for the skippers of the Border Force vessels, totally unreasonable, totally impractical. just airlines.
Yeah. So what is the answer, Henry? Because we just lost you for a second there. You know, is the answer what some people think it is, which is to go to these countries of origin and make them more stable or somehow make them more habitable for people? I'm not even sure that would work anymore, because many of these young, particularly the young men who want to come, are coming for a better life. They're coming to make more money. They're coming for economic reasons, right?
That's true. But Mike, back sort of between about 2001 and 2006, the UK ran something called Operation or Project Reflex. And this was 12 government agencies that were all working together in a coordinated manner, pooling their resources to disrupt organised crime and people smuggling, and moving people and human trafficking and people smuggling all the way through to the European Union and the UK. It was massively successful. For 3 years, I was working embedded in the Ministry of Interior and the security services of a particular country, running and funding, doing the training for, and actually running intelligence and tactical operations on the ground to target these networks. Now, Tony Blair pulled the funding for that in 2006. It helped. But there is no silver bullet. We need to be doing that. We need to be using all our diplomatic strength and power. We need to build that up as well to persuade these countries to stop the corruption, stop the endemic sort of problems with their economy so that people don't feel the need to move for economic reasons. At the same time, we need to use the stick, not just the carrot. We need to use projects like Reflex and reinstitute them. We also need to start building up our own defences on this. We need to, in this country, I'll give you an example, depends how you measure it, of course, but there are 11 different government agencies with boats operating in some way in relation to our maritime borders. 11 different agencies, Coast Guard, Fisheries Protection, Border Force, and so on and others. Now, in the US, it is one agency reporting to one government department, and that is the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
So a Coast Guard vessel might today be dealing with migrants, then this afternoon it's dealing with a fisheries incident, then something, a drug smuggling thing the next moment. And it's one agency, it's cohesive. Here, 11 different agencies, no overarching strategy framework, no cohesive plan, no effort to work towards a common set of established goals on those borders and utilise and mobilise mutual support in use of those resources. It's utterly incompetent.
Yeah. Well, it certainly seems to have no working parts whatsoever. I mean, there's not one bit of our immigration control that works, it seems to me, at all. I mean, today in the papers, we've seen a story where yet another plane load of foreign criminals who were due to be sent back to Jamaica, deported, was boarded, and most of them were taken off for last-minute appeals. I mean, the whole system is broken, isn't it?
Absolutely. Mike, interestingly, I understand that some of these, you know, there are all sorts of people in this group of migrants or deportees who were on this flight, you know, and they were all taken off for different reasons. Apparently, four of them swallowed razor blades or something. You know, you and I wouldn't be able to get on an aeroplane with razor blades. How can they? Supposedly, they've come from a deportation centre and they've been carrying razor blades with them.
Save your plane fare, just leave them in there.
Yes, it's one solution, I suppose. But these last-minute appeals, Mike, you know, they're absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah.
You know, why is it that a human rights lawyer can lodge a last-minute appeal based on new information? These people have been in the country for ages. They've been going through a legal process for ages. What about I used to be a police officer many years ago. I don't know whether I can remember it now, but the caution. You do not have to say anything when questioned, but if you do not mention when questioned something that you later rely on in court, it may harm your defence. Well, you know, if these people knew that they'd got a family member somewhere or that there was some other fact, why the hell haven't we got a similar thing in place? If you don't mention it at the beginning of the process, I'm sorry, but you can't make an appeal based on new information if you knew it beforehand.
No, exactly right. And the idea that Jamaica is somehow a dangerous place to go for somebody who is a hardened criminal is a joke, isn't it?
Well, it may be dangerous for a hardened criminal who's rubbed up hardened criminals the wrong way. But frankly, I don't have a lot of sympathy there.
No.
As far as I'm concerned, if somebody is a foreign national, foreign citizen, they come to this country, they commit crime, then they damn well need to be kicked out. And I don't give a damn, frankly, Mike, whether or not they have got family members here or anything else. They should have thought about that before they broke the law. They need to go.
I couldn't
agree
more.
We need to put the mechanisms in place to do that.
I could not.
And it's the same with stuff in the Channel, Mike. Yeah. You know, the people, we know, Priti Patel has admitted they're economic migrants. Why are we treating them as refugees? Mm. It's just simply because they say so.
I know.
We need to make sure that we've got the right things in there. And in January, it takes a while to sort of, I've got to bring the thing, get the thing together. But I'm going to be making a presentation on the plan that I would put in front of government, if government were to ask me. The plan, not to say this isn't good enough, that's not good enough, oh, we should turn them around, but a plan as to what the government should do to secure our maritime borders.
Well,
my mind is that they don't know how to do it. I don't buy into the conspiracy. I think they simply don't know how to do it. They're too incompetent. Mm. So let's put a plan in front of them. Let's them hold them to accountable to that, accountable to implementing that plan in the absence of anything better. And if they want to come up with something better, great.
Absolutely. Well, Henry, please do come in and present it to us, and we'll present it with you to them. It might be able to be something we can get moving on, because I think an awful lot of people that listen to this show and who watch this show will want something done by then, if not before. Henry Bolton, OBE, talking sense, making sense. And it's a terrible situation, what's going on the border of Poland and Belarus. Absolutely dreadful. I don't know how it's going to end, but it ain't going to be pretty. This is Talk Radio.
Talk Radio. Across the UK. Online. On DAB. And on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham. On Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB, online, or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.